Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today for our Teletown Hall on Child Wellness. My name is Tasha Berner-Horvath, and I'm honored to serve as your State Assembly member for Encinitas, Carlsbad, Oceanside Vista, and Camp Pendleton. In the next 30 minutes, we're going to focus our conversation on child wellness, especially in the context of all the changes and disruptions in the last 6 months, and provide our parents, our guardians, our caregivers, with some tips and advice to support the mental and physical well-being of our children and all the children they care for. So, you know, just a little bit of context. You know, my name is Tasha Berner-Horvath. I'm your assembly member. I took office in 2018. I think I never thought I would be leading during a worldwide pandemic. And since the governor declared a state of emergency due to the coronavirus in early March, the legislature has voted time and again to support our state's coronavirus response, as well as passing a budget that protects public health and education. And today's invited speaker will address the topic of child wellness and help us better learn how to improve the health and well-being of all of our children. And a little bit of context about me. I'm a mom of two school-age children. Mate is in eighth grade. He's 12 years old. And Maya is in fourth, and she's nine. So I personally understand the challenges we're all facing here in North County. And I know I've spoken to so many parents like myself that are dealing with the added stress levels of distance learning, hybrid models. And they've asked me, Tasha, what can we do to help our kids during this very isolating time? And I think the first step is recognizing that we have challenges, that this time is an exceptional time that none of us have been through before, and we're all trying to do our best. And the other thing is, they've asked how are other families coping with this added stress, and maybe there's some best practices. So that's why I decided to ask my friend, Kelly Motadel, who's now our child public health officer for the county. Most of you will know Kelly as the former head of the Vista Community Clinic. So she's a very familiar face and trusted confidant in North County, and I asked her to come in to help us understand this. And so I'm really pleased to have her here. I know my husband and I, Kelly, we've talked a lot about our responsibility as parents during this time. And, you know, we made a really hard decision at the very early part of the pandemic that says no matter how things are going, whether we like or dislike or we embrace or question any of the things going on, that we are going to model a positive attitude for our kids because we're their rock, we're their foundation. And, you know, I think I shared with Kelly that we had a briefing from our state attorney, Surgeon General, and she was talking about the fact that kids know that this is a weird time. Kids know that it's a scary time. Kids know that there's a virus that kills some people and not others. And so they're looking to us, and the best thing we could do is acknowledge, yes, this is a scary time, but then also have this really positive attitude. So we try to do that for ourselves, and I know there are days that are really hard, and there are other days where we play a lot of board games, but, you know, it's worth it to provide that stability for our children. And so that's just a little think of bit of background of today's Child Wellness Teletown Hall. And before we get started, when I let turn over to Kelly to introduce herself, I want to make sure we get a little housekeeping out of the way. So Kelly will talk about her role in protecting public health during COVID-19 when it comes to using data reports and explaining how it supports our work towards getting kids back to school. I know if you have school-aged children, most people, they want to do it safely, and so they're torn between us. You know, we know kids need socialization. We want our kids back to school as much as possible, but we also we don't want to be the ones that cause a surge in cases, and we don't want our kids to bring it home to us. So it's a really difficult balancing act. And across the state of California, many residents have common questions when it comes to child wellness and impacts their growth, their resiliency, their caretakers. And those caretakers, you know, sometimes I think we think about parents, but they could be foster parents, they could be guardians, they could be teachers, they could be all sorts of people who are involved in our children's lives. And so today we're going to be asking those questions. We've gotten a list of people. A lot of you have already submitted to our listeners. A lot of you have already submitted questions, so they're integrated. But if you do have questions and you're not hearing them being answered, you can send an email to assemblymember.bernerhorvath@assembly.ca.gov. That's assemblymember, all one word, dot B-O-E-R-T NERHORVATH at assembly.ca.gov, and we'll do our best to address them. If we don't get it answered here, my staff will follow up with you, or we'll include it in a future Teletown Hall. So let's begin with Dr. Motoda. Kelly, why don't you take it over, tell us all about you, and how is it being the new child health officer for San Diego County?
Well, thank you, Tasha, and thank you for your kind words. So I'm super happy to be here today, and hopefully we'll be able to share some useful things with your audience and constituents about keeping kids healthy during this really unusually difficult time. And I was so happy to hear you talking about, you know, trying to stay calm and model that, you know, calm behavior in front of your kids, because you're absolutely right. That can make such a huge difference for our kids. I myself, too, have two school-age children. My son Armand is 9 years old in fourth grade, and my daughter Avia is 7 years old in second grade. And, you know, we also have been having to make those tough decisions that all parents out there are making about how to address these things and how to, you know, keep them entertained and calm, and at the same time care for ourselves, which is a big part of caring for our children, is also caring for ourselves and making that tough decision about the schools. You know, and as we talked about yesterday, you know, as much as I am a proponent of trying to get these schools open because we know how important it is for so many reasons, we also need to do it in a safe manner so that our children aren't traumatized in another way by losing one of their loved ones. And so, you know, we made the difficult choice of keeping our kids on distance learning, even though their school was open for in-person because of our circumstances. We live with my father-in-law, and so we have a high-risk home. And so that's why some of these things I'll talk about will really be a personal decision from household to household, and hopefully we can provide some guidance for that. I am a native of San Diego. I was born and raised in Escondido, and other than my training and education, I've lived in the North County, so I'm familiar with a lot about, you know, our district, and I'm happy to be here to try and give back.
Thank you, Kelly. Yes, so she, you know, I don't know, Dr. Kelly is very humble, but she went to UC San Francisco at Fresno program for her pediatric training. She has an MPH from CSU Fresno and an MD from UCSD and her BA from Yale. So we're so happy to have you. You know, do we want to start out, Kelly, and maybe you tell us a little bit, you know, you were at Vista Community Clinic, now you're at the county. What has that transition been like? What do you do as the child public health officer? Did we have one before? Or are you the first one?
I am not the first one. We did have one. Dr. Dean Seidlinger was the previous child health officer, and he is now actually the public health officer up in Portland, and that position had been open for a few months, so might have gone out of some people's view, but I'm happy to fill that position now. It's big shoes to fill. And really my job there is to help plan and guide the children's health programs at the county and provide the clinical direction to things like child welfare services, the First Five program, behavioral health services, and our California Children's Services and other programs related to children's health here in San Diego. I've been, you know, getting pulled into COVID, obviously, planning here and there, so working with the early childhood education sector to try and make sure things are happening safely there. And so this was a big transition for me. The COVID itself, when I was at Vista, was when COVID, you know, the emergency hit. And, you know, we had to really shift gears in a hurry, as all healthcare providers did, to try and continue providing care to our patients in a safe and effective manner, and switching over to telehealth. And in a lot of cases, but some things really still have to be in person. And the same goes for some of those programs at the county as well that we'll talk about. But it's, you know, been a great opportunity for me to feel like I'm impacting more lives, and back to my passion and roots of pediatrics as well.
Well, and I love that. I love when moms are in positions of power, because I think we do so much as moms. Sure, there's a lot of good dads out there too, but, you know, I just love that. So maybe you could go through how are our county public health programs adapting to telemedicine? If people are needing to access those programs, where do they go? What do they do? Can you give us a little intro to that? Because, you know, we'll get into a little bit more about the child wellness later. You know, if people are saying, like, I know I have a problem and I would normally go to the county, how do they access that information?
Yeah, sure. So we, you know, at the county also had to adapt, but our programs are mostly up and running. They may not all be in person. They also are using technology like the rest of us to conduct some of the services that they have. But, you know, first and foremost, I want people to hear, and you'll hear me say this numerous times throughout this hour, Tasha, is that I want people to know about 211 San Diego. So 211sandiego.org is a wonderful resource for people to go to, or they can just call 211. Just like you would call 911 for emergency, you can call 211 to find out about all the health resources and other social resources that you may need in San Diego County. There's lots of helplines that we can talk about as well. I don't know if you want me to talk about that now or later, but there's definitely other supports outside of that. But 211, if people don't take away anything else from today, that is going to be, you know, something that can really help them. And I know you and I have both talked about how we didn't even realize for a long time what a great resource that was. But I think, you know, that's so important. So the county is back to doing home visits in person if people want those home visits for those in the home visiting programs. The first five programs, some of them have to be done in person, but those that aren't, we're continuing to do those programs virtually. The child welfare services are continuing to do their visits to check on those kiddos. And, you know, Polinsky Center has never really stopped. They've, you know, been up and running in person all along. And so really, just like everywhere else, you know, we're doing what we can to keep people safe. And in some situations that involves a virtual format, but where it's not possible, we're back to doing things safely in person.
Yeah, so 211.org, I'll let our listeners know we were having a prep call yesterday. And it was interesting, until I was elected to city council, I had never heard about 211.org. And it's really, for any of the services, you know, it doesn't mean you have to be low income, you can be low income, but it's basically a navigator for our county health services. The county does so much that I think people don't see, and it's a really unfortunate because there's so many services out there for us. And so, Kelly, you could talk about this now, or you could talk about this later. So what would you prefer? For our listeners, anything that Kelly says in terms of a resource, when we post this on our website, once it's done, probably tomorrow, we will also put on that website all of these resources that you're hearing about now, so you don't have to listen through and re-record that. You can find them right away. So, Kelly, do you want to go through them now? Like, if people need support, what are the things the county does, and where should they go?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about that in case anybody's not able to stick around for the whole hour. We want to make sure they hear about that. And you're so right, Tasha, that, you know, really there are a lot of great resources throughout the county, and that 211 is important, but a lot of times people need actual help. They're in a crisis situation. They may be in an emergency mental health situation. There's an emergency screening unit that's open 24/7 for children and adolescents, since our focus is here on kids today. That's mostly what I'll be talking about. Some of these services are available for others, but this one, emergency screening unit, can be a 24/7 phone call for folks at 619-876-4502. Again, that's 619-876-4502. And that's for those that are really experiencing a mental health emergency, because we know there are increased issues with depression and anxiety, and those that had pre-existing conditions of that are being exacerbated as well. The kids also may be able to partner for behavioral health services through their schools. The county actually has contracts with a number of schools in the county to provide mental health services at the school. So even if your school is on distance learning, they may have resumed those services. It'll just be on a telehealth format, but still very effective. There's also a suicide prevention line, access and crisis line, that people can call if they feel that they're at that point. And that's so important to have this in advance, because once you're feeling that low, you may not think to look for this number. But 888-724-7240. Again, that's 888-724-7240 for suicide crisis. And then there's emotional support actually available for anyone, 24/7, all ages. It's free through Optum, which is a program that works for behavioral health services with many health plans. But they have actually opened up an emotional support line for anyone since COVID started, which is wonderful. And that can be reached at the following phone number, 866-342-6892. Again, 866-342-6892. And that, again, is available to anyone, all ages. You know, and I mentioned a lot about behavioral health and mental health resources, but we know a lot of people are also suffering from food insecurity during this time. So don't forget about the San Diego Food Bank. Their website, sandiegofoodbank.org, can be a great resource. There are other resources also that can be found through 211, but I'll mention that one specifically. And then also there are programs for the kids that I mentioned before through the first five. People can call get that information through 211 for any of those, or they can call the first five directly for more information on their home visiting, their oral health, their health development, their behavioral services that they can offer for those kiddos under five. And that's 888, the number five, and then FIRST, F-I-R-S-T-S. And I'm sorry, I don't have those numbers handy, but it's 888, the number five, and then the word FIRST, F-I-R-S-T-S. Again, all that information can be found through 211 also. And then also, I think we'll talk a little bit today about our concerns with more kids being at home and out of the direct eye of their teachers and doctors as much as, before March, that we are concerned about increase in child abuse. And there are actually, there's a line people can call if they're feeling they need help, parents need help. If kids are feeling in danger, that is a hotline they can call 24/7, 800. Number four, a child, that's 800-422-4453, 800-422-4453. And that's really offers resources for parents, for kids, for teachers. All calls are anonymous and free. So those are some of the ones that I wanted to specifically mention, but again, going to 211, they'll find a whole lot more.
That's an excellent overview. And just for everybody listening, if you didn't catch those numbers, again, when we post this on our website tomorrow, we will have all those numbers available, and maybe we might even do a little social media campaign to let people know, to really highlight some of these programs, because I think they're so critical right now. You know, you touched on, you know, everything from preschool-age kids all the way up to teens and youth. So what trends are you seeing in stress levels at each of these different ages, and what does that mean for depression rates?
Yeah, so thank you for giving me a chance to at least to expand on that a little bit. You know, we're really, I think, primarily worried about our teens when it comes to depression and anxiety, rightfully so. But there's, you know, lots of data coming out now that, you know, pre-COVID depression rates were around 10% for teenagers, anxiety rates probably around 10 to 15% for teenagers. They're now up to one-third of teens, 33% are reporting moderate symptoms that would meet criteria for moderate or severe depression, 35% for moderate to severe anxiety. And these are national numbers, but we know those rates are rising, and those numbers get even worse if you look just at girls. So the teens, there's a reason we hear a lot about them and our concerns with their risk for suicide and depression and anxiety, and this is a particularly isolating time for teens, probably more than any other, as they're growing into their social worlds. So we are definitely seeing a lot of problems there. But as you mentioned, that anxiety doesn't just start in teenagehood. That depression we can sometimes see down to preschool-age kids. I tried to check the CDC website to get some current numbers on that for the younger age kids. And the last time they updated their website was March 30th. So nothing that reflects COVID. But even pre-COVID, it showed that 7% of kids 3 to 17 had been diagnosed with anxiety, and 3% with depression. So it already was there, even in the littles. And, you know, those numbers are climbing as well. We know that during COVID.
Yeah, and I think that's really important to look at when I look at that jump. And I see that when I talk to other moms, you know, they talk about their teenage kids really struggling. And they kind of relate it to the isolation factor. I know all of our school districts, at least I've been in contact with my school districts for about 5 months on how they do safe reopening, and they're all in different phases and in different places. But if you're a parent, I'll take an example for my son. My son's in middle school. He's in eighth grade, and he is, for the next month or so, not going to go back to school. What kind of advice, if I were to see some of the signs for depression, anxiety, what are some things that I should be doing as a parent? Kelly, are you on mute?
Oh,
Oh, sorry. Yes, I was. Thank you. Thank you for
asking. Happens all the time. No problem. It's the COVID problem. It's fine.
I was so eager to talk about this that I didn't even unmute myself. So, yes, no, thank you for asking. And, you know, first and foremost, we need to be talking to our kids, not waiting for their, you know, to be, you know, something that triggers you, but daily checking in with our kids, asking them about their day, asking them about how they're feeling, what you could be doing to help make them feel better, what do they think would make them feel better, and, you know, really having those conversations, asking them specifics, not just kind of yes or no questions, but, you know, what was your favorite part about school today, or what was really hard about school today, what was the worst moment on your video call today, you know, get them talking. We know that that's going to help them, so get them talking. That's so important. We have done some things. You know, my kids are littler, at 7 and 9, so a little bit lower risk, but still I worry, you know, a lot about their social isolation. And so I've tried to set up some Zoom play dates for them. And at first when I was doing it, it sort of felt clumsy, like, you know, what's my 7-year-old going to talk about on Zoom for, you know, some significant period of time with her friends? Well, she shocked me. You know, she was on the phone or on the Zoom with her friend for 2 hours. They were cooking. They were coloring together. They were playing with their dolls together. I mean, they really had a great time, and, you know, it really kind of opened my eyes to how effective that can be. My son, you know, I've done a few with him. He's chosen to play video games, but hey, if he's at least, you know, I'm hearing him talk with his friend at the same time, I'm happy. You know, I'm happy about that. And we also have now moved forward to do a few selective in-person play dates. You know, we all have our bubbles, and we have to be careful to kind of protect that bubble. But it is a time where we're feeling a little more comfortable about expanding that bubble. You want to be consistent with who you're having over. If they are in in-person school, keep it within kids who are in their class, that cohort of kids. You know, don't go, you know, outside of that cohort. But I think it's okay to have one or two other kids in their bubble at this point that they can interact with. We know that social media is a way to keep teens connected. I would just caution parents to make sure that they're monitoring that, because we know that with the increased social media use these last few months, there's also been an increase in predatory behavior. So make sure I would have said this pre-COVID also, make sure you know their passwords. That has to be something you can check on. Make sure you're checking on, you know, what they're posting. I think that's really important. But it is also still an outlet to help them manage their stress. And then the other thing I would comment on is the littler ones, the toddlers. So for them, you know, we're a little bit less worried about them, the social isolation being a problem for them. But now they've got parents at home that they don't always have access to. They've got, you know, we're working from home, right, Tasha? We're working, and, you know, I've got the sign on my
door.
That's
right,
now.
Yeah.
It says, like, stop, do not enter, right? But you want to make sure that you do check in with them, you know, give them, like you would give them a snack, and make sure they have a snack, make sure they have 5 to 10 minutes of positive attention throughout the day, every few hours from you as well. So those are some of the things that I would be encouraging parents to do.
Well, that's good. I feel like, I don't know if we did it intentionally, but, you know, my daughter is 9 and has 2 friends from her class. They're in hybrid that she has in her bubble. And, you know, we only do outdoor play dates. But it has been a really positive development for her and emotionally. But we also did the Zoom play date, and I thought, oh, this is such a weird thing. Is this going to work out? Her and her friend, they were drawing. They were doing all the stuff. They like to make foxes, so they were drawing foxes who could draw the best fox, you know. And so, you know, I think it's interesting, because I think we probably have our prejudices, like, oh, that's not going to really work out well. And it's fine, you know, and my son is also doing the gaming. We actually did a social media safety webinar with DA Steffens on luring and how do we keep our teenagers safe on social media, because it is that two sides. Yes, it's social. And so I think we're going to be having another one coming up soon for those parents who didn't catch it the first time. So stay tuned for that, listeners. So I think all those questions are really good. And I think, you know, the other thing that we do every day, Kelly, is we try to get out. And my kids do Zoom karate, so they either do Zoom karate, we have a trampoline, so they either jump on the trampoline, or we'll go on, like, little family neighborhood bike rides. And when my daughter first started in the full distance learning in August, she struggled a lot with the full distance learning. It was really hard. She has some special needs. And so we started doing this bike ride every afternoon, and I cleared my schedule for just 30 minutes to do a little quick tour around the neighborhood. And it's incredible how much that changed her positive outlook on life, to know that she had something to look forward to. It was time that we did something together. So not every parent can take, you know, a 3:30 to 4 p.m. off for their kids, but, you know, to find that time, whether it's just a walk or, you know, whatever it's going to be. But it's amazing how resilient the kids are, and how the little things we do, like you were suggesting with the toddlers, to give 5 minutes, you know, every hour or so of positive attention. I think that's so important. So you've talked a lot about a lot of the questions that we have. So I'm going to kind of skip ahead in our things. You know, what are we seeing in terms of reports on child abuse? You know, I remember hearing that when the pandemic started, you know, we were, I think, in the caucus, in the assembly caucus, we were looking very closely at the child abuse numbers. And one of the things we thought was very strange was there seemed to be lower numbers being reported, but one of the things we worried is there weren't eyes on the kids. Like, kids weren't in school, so they weren't interacting with their teachers or their daycare providers or their after-school folks. What's going on there?
Yes, you were right to be worried. You know, that is definitely something that we have seen, with the number of reports dropping significantly. So I think I did provide some numbers that you might be able to post for your constituents about the number of reports that dropped dramatically relative to last year. April, May, and June had about anywhere from 1,000 to 3,000 less reports than we had per month the years prior. And the other end of that is then oftentimes the reports that we were getting and when the investigations were done, the amount that were actually substantiated was higher than they had been in previous years, and often more severe injuries. And you hit the nail on the head. You know, there aren't as many eyes on the kids. You know, the teachers, they were such a protector of our kids in so many ways, and also the physicians. So it's a lot harder for our healthcare professionals to detect the subtleties that we might have if the kid was in person, if we're doing a Zoom call for the visit instead. And so now, you know, as we recognize this, there's more training out there for teachers and physicians to be able to how to do that via Zoom, what to look for when you're doing telelearning or telehealth. And also, we're getting more kids back into the schools. We're getting more kids back into their doctor's visits, and so that we're seeing those numbers start to improve again. But we also, you know, need to rely on the public. You know, if they are seeing things, we need them to, you know, call in to report suspected abuse, because really, that's there to help protect the kids. It's not about, you know, did something horrible happen, but maybe that parent just needs some help, and that's an opportunity for the county to send some assistance in for that family and get them connected with resources or services that they may need. So I also would like to take this moment, Tasha, just to mention that besides the non-accidental trauma or the abuse, we actually were seeing an increase in injuries, accidental injuries in the homes with kids being at home more. So calls to poison control centers went up by 20%. And we also saw an increase in reports of near drowning incidents over the summer. So, you know, just because a child is injured, it's not always non-accidental. There's a lot of accidental injuries that can be prevented with parents just being made more aware to look out for these things.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that, Kelly. Those are both very good points. You know, with everybody eating home all the time, I know I've, you know, we go through more food at home because everybody's eating at home all the time now. But I hadn't thought about the different access to, or the different dangers around being home. So it's a really good point to bring up for parents. I know we covered this already, but, you know, specifically I've talked to parents who are worried about their teenage kids and teen depression. You were giving us numbers earlier that were really challenging. You know, really, really it's a problem that, you know, parents, I think, as with their kids being home, that we need to be actively working on with our kids. And maybe because our kids are home, we're seeing it more now than we were before when they were kind of out and about more. You had said, you know, you can stay connected through social media. You said get a cohort of one or two friends, and, you know, if they're going back to school in hybrid, that are in part of that hybrid cohort. Are there some other things that parents can do to help their teen kids with depression? I mean, this could be good, solid advice. before the pandemic, but, you know, might be especially relevant now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I was glad to have you mention the activity and the exercise, because that's definitely something that we can take advantage of living in the climate that we do, is to get our kids outside more. I think that's a really important thing. And I actually sort of told my kids, hey, it's recess, you'd be outside, get outside, you know, just encouraging even the teams to get outside more often. I think it's going to be important. Also encouraging positive thinking. You know, there are definitely some methods that parents can use, such as requiring kids to name at least one positive thing that happened in their day at the end of every day. And pretty soon they're looking for those positive things as their day goes on, which gives a little different spin for them and can help pull them out of some of those emotional roller coasters that they're going through right now. Of course, you know, seek help. Your primary care physician, if you are connected, they're probably screening for depression and anxiety, or should be screening for depression and anxiety in those teens, usually from 12 years and up. They're going to do some routine screening. But also, you know, reach out for therapy, reach out for professional help if you're really worried about your child.
I think that's fantastic advice. And as I said, my son's like 12, you know, I always say he's 12 going on to 86 because he's kind of an old soul kind of kid. But as he goes into the teenage years, that's some really good advice that I'm going to take with me regardless of the pandemic. You know, one of the things you brought up earlier was how it's harder for physicians to kind of see maybe if a parent needs help or if the child is struggling because of telehealth. And so why is it important for parents to continue their regular medical checkups and vaccination schedules? Because I know, we didn't want to, you know, at first there weren't appointments unless they were emergencies, and then it opened up. So what's the kind of status now in San Diego County, and what should parents be thinking about when they think about their child's medical situation?
Thanks so much for bringing this up, because you're right. When things first started, it was kind of, I used to say back at the clinic, you know, hey, this is wartime medicine. We're only doing what has to be done, you know, in person. We really had to, you know, tighten the ship pretty quickly. But, you know, relatively early, we realized what was missing out, what our patients were missing out and what we were missing on our patients, and realized the importance of getting them back in. Those vaccination rates were falling, medical checkups, routine medical checkups were being missed. And now, because we've spent more time figuring out how to make things safe in the healthcare facilities, most healthcare facilities are really able to do anything that they were doing before. So if your child was due for a well child visit anytime since March, you know, it is safe for you to make that appointment. Sometimes those visits may still be at least partially telehealth, but maybe not, depending on the age of your child. The vaccinations, a lot of facilities have sort of parking lot vaccination stations set up to keep things safer outdoors, as we've talked about. I can remember being on a call with a mom for a 12-month-old well child visit, and we were doing some things in person, but not a whole lot. This probably was in April, and, you know, 12 months, that's where the kids get a lot of vaccines. And I had been hearing about the vaccine rates falling, and I said, okay, Mom, we've got, you know, the vaccine tent, the drive-through vaccine tent set up, so we'll set you up an appointment to drive through that. And she was very resistant. You know, she did not want to risk bringing her child in. And I didn't blame her, you know, from everything that was on the news at that time. You certainly would be worried about exposing your child or yourself. But, you know, talking to them about the reassuring them about the safety measures that have been put in place. And truly, you know, sometimes right now the safest places to be are healthcare facilities, because they are so hyper aware of all the things that need to be done and protocols that should be followed to keep people safe. They need to keep their staff safe and their doctors safe. And so they are doing what they need to do to keep the patient safe at this point. And I really want to encourage people to start to catch back up on their preventive measures and their vaccination and their routine checkups, because it is a safe place to be at this point.
And I think that's an excellent point. You know, I started going back in for my stuff, and I've taken my son in, but I think it's time to schedule something for my daughter. And I just, on that point, it's always good. You know, I just did a public service announcement today on this. It's just a reminder to all our listeners that our healthcare providers are really, really worried about a bad flu seasons combined with a COVID-19 pandemic. So they are encouraging everybody to go get your flu shot. So maybe there's a good opportunity to have your well child visit. If you haven't done it, make sure you're caught up on all your shots and get your flu shot at the same time. So
absolutely.
Right? It's a good little reminder of the flu shot. You know, the flu shot is voluntary, but, you know, I think it's really important this year, you know, the flu is cause for hospitalizations. And, if our hospitals, one of our measures for keeping schools open, people often forget, is how available are spots in our hospitals. And if our hospitals and ICU are filled with flu patients, that means we're going to go quicker into that threaded purple tier. So we want to make sure we keep our schools and businesses open. So, you know, everybody remember to do their part.
And Tasha, I appreciate you bringing that up, and I just want to make one more point on that topic, which is I've been hearing from a lot of my physician friends that there's actually been a little bit more resistance to flu vaccination this year from some parents because they're hearing a lot of information about how vaccines are developed, you know, with the COVID vaccine coming, and they're concerned if, you know, safety measures are being taken in that process. I just want to reassure people this flu shot was put together before COVID even hit. You know, this is something that is just as safe this year as every other year. This is not in any way, you know, rushed through. And it is, as you said, even more important this year to keep people healthy.
Yes, I think that's a good point to remember is that, you know, there are safety precautions. And I think in California, we're very cautious about making sure that all safety precautions for any future vaccine for COVID are being followed. I think, you know, we want to make sure that we keep people safe. And that means all aspects of it. So pivoting a little bit to a little bit of a question that some people have asked. Some parents have lost their jobs, and that means they've lost their health insurance. So what resources do those folks go to if, you know, either their parents and themselves are sick or their kids are sick?
Yes, you are absolutely right that so many people have, you know, lost their health insurance at the most inopportune time during this pandemic. But there are resources they can reach out to. So, you know, the ACA still exists. Medi-Cal services in California are available to all children that meet the income criteria. So there's really no child that shouldn't be able to get health care in our state. Even if they have immigrated here, they are still eligible for these services. So there is definitely available services. Where do they go? So again, 211 is a great resource. But most community health centers, which are in, you know, several community health centers in your district, they have staff specifically that are there to help families navigate checking their eligibility for these programs, helping them enroll in these programs. And, you know, I would encourage people, even if you're not sick right now, look into these things now because you don't know what tomorrow holds. And it will be a lot less stressful for you if you do have something that requires immediate attention for you to know you already have that coverage and you're not trying to do two awful things at once, you know, navigate this new system for themselves as well as take care of, you know, their medical concerns. So they definitely have opportunities to get insurance if they've lost their private insurance or their employer-related insurance, and I would encourage them to look into that now.
And I think that's so important, folks. All I can tell you, and if you're having problems, just to all of our listeners out there, if you're having problems navigating the healthcare systems, please, please, please call my office, email us. We will absolutely be available for you. My office number is 760-434-7605. You can call us and say you're having, you know, you've lost your health insurance. You're trying to figure out how to get covered California, how to get this, how to do that. And, you know, there's all sorts of resources. And that brings us to a really tough question, Kelly. What's the best way to approach someone who needs help? How do we help them overcome the stigma of getting help because they may be unemployed? You know, I think when we go into unemployment and we go into some of these things, there's a mental health toll that comes on this. How do we help somebody who needs help and help them realize, like, hey, everybody's struggling right now. Here's where you could go and help them provide for themselves and their families?
Yeah, such a good question. I mean, I think the first step is really just acknowledging that we are all struggling right now. Like you said, so many people have lost their jobs, their businesses, they've had their hours maybe cut back, they've lost their insurance, and many have lost loved ones. I mean, I don't think you'd probably, I think you'd have a hard time finding someone who hasn't experienced at least one of these things that can really be life-altering during these last few months. And so we really are all in this together. I know people hear that, but we really are and need to be looking out for each other. The pandemic doesn't discriminate. You know, we have more in common than differences, and so we do need to be looking out for each other. So if you see someone who's struggling, first, having the information about these resources handy is great because sometimes there may be an opportunity that they're bringing up that you would be ready and available to offer them some of the information that you're learning about. But if they don't bring it up, starting that conversation by just talking about some of your own struggles can open that door for them to feel comfortable to start telling you a bit about theirs as well, which can be a window to talk about that as well. And then hopefully today is a good start to, you know, help people realize that there's nothing to be, you know, embarrassed about in these days of a pandemic. We all have needs.
Absolutely. You know, I think, and we're all in this together is a really good thing. You know, I tell people when I see them, because I do volunteer at our food banks, you know, we have so many resources in North County, and, you know, my one hope is we help people realize everybody is pulling together. You know, I think there's something, the strength of North County, and Kelly, being a North County native, you know this, the strength of North County is when we face adversity, we always come together, right? That's what we do. And
Absolutely.
So to make sure that we, you know, that, you know, if we see our neighbor struggling, and when I go out and volunteer at the food banks, I say, hey, you know, the job right now is to keep a roof over people's head, to keep food on their table, to keep dollars in the pockets so they can pay their bills. Let's make sure that you can get their health insurance. Make sure your kids are healthy. And, you know, that's what I think we try to do from our office, and we have great partners like you at the county. Remember 211.org. Is going to be our motto, mantra for, I think, this Teletown Hall, because that will help you navigate. I think people forget 211. It's like, you know, Kelly, I think we might be of the age group that we still remember 411, which was an information line you used to call from your landline, and you could get any number. I remember discovering it as a kid and thinking how cool it was. You could just ask for anybody's number in whatever city, and they would tell you what the number is. But 211 is a little bit like that with the county health services. So they have all these services. And you also have services for postpartum home visits. Is that correct? And what does that look like?
Yes, that is correct. Yeah, we actually have several different home visiting programs, many of which start during pregnancy. They have different focuses. So some are specifically for lower income, but not all. Some are specific for first-time parents, some for those who have been victims of domestic violence. Some are for Black women, some are for military and their dependents, and others are for specific zip codes. So there are lots of different home visiting nursing programs that are available. I mentioned briefly earlier that some of those are now actually going back and actually doing in-home visits for those that feel comfortable with that. And if they don't, they have mechanisms to do teleservice for those programs as well. You know, the point of those programs is really to support the moms during this really difficult time in their life, COVID or no COVID. You know, being postpartum is a tough time for parents. And during COVID, moms really have much less support in many ways than they probably did before. They don't have the grandparents that can come over. Family and friends are probably not dropping by as much as they did before. Their older kids may not be in school and may be at home, you know, learning virtually while they're trying to take care of a newborn. So we know that now more than ever that's important. And we know that kids and moms who have been through these programs fare better in their health. These kids grow up with better health outcomes, with better developmental outcomes, just because those early years are so important. And so, yes, definitely, again, 211 has information on all those programs, but there are many different home programs that can help a new mom.
I think that's fantastic. I think, you know, what I'm going to take away from today's Teletown Hall is, one, the county offers lots of services that we kind of don't think about, which is a little bit of a shame. So go to 211.org to find out about all the different ones. Two, we know that you know, there's this balance between, you know, getting kids back to school and doing it safely. And so kids are struggling, especially teenagers, with anxiety and depression, just so, like, for full disclosure, my almost teenager has joined me out here on my patio to listen to this call. And so they are suffering, higher rates of depression, anxiety. And maybe that's because we see it, because they're home with us all the time. And maybe that's because the situation is more difficult. Some of the things that we could do, are getting out and exercising with them once a day. I loved, Kelly, what you said, is asking them every day, what was the highlight of the day? What was one positive thing? So they get into a positive mental health, pattern, which I think is a super, looking for the positive in life is a super good attribute. Checking in with them on their social media accounts, making sure what they're doing is connecting with other people, but making sure they're staying safe of the cyberbullying and the luring and some of the negative aspects of social media. And then for all kids at all levels, checking in with them, through positive attention throughout the day, I think is super important. So I think, we've taken our listeners through a lot of different really good pieces of advice. Kelly, thank you so much for being here. I'm so happy you're our child health officer in San Diego County, and I know you're doing lots of good things. Do we leave anything else? Do you want to close with a few minutes and any points we didn't cover or anything you want any of our listeners to walk away with?
I think we covered really everything that I hope to today, but I just want to, reassure people that even though not everything is back open, a lot of things, are still routine, and helping keep those routines that you can will also help your kids, and also getting back out there to get your preventive care, just reinforcing that, because checking in with their doctors is also going to help elucidate any issues that may be cropping up. So thank you for this opportunity to talk to everyone.
Yes, and thank you, Kelly, for joining us today and for the incredible work you're doing with the county. Thank you to all the participants who joined us today to learn about child wellness. Again, we are the parents, we are the caregivers, we are the guardians. We have so much of an opportunity to help our kids navigate this really unprecedented time. I know we're all more informed, including myself, after today's discussion. So I think, one of the things you said, Kelly, at the very beginning, I wanted to remind people of as the parents, as the guardians, as the teachers, as the caregivers, we need to do self-care for ourselves, and that helps us be better parents. And our kids depend on their caregivers to be healthy as well. So check in with your loved ones, check in with your friends, your neighbors, share these tips and resources mentioned today. As always, my office is here to assist everybody and welcome your questions, comments, and concerns. My goal is always to provide the highest quality of public service to my district on state-related matters. If you have any questions that you think of later but that weren't asked today, you can email my staff. My district director is Janet, J-A-N-E-T, dot Chin, C-H-I-N, at asm.ca.gov. That's Janet.Chin at asm.ca.gov. My field representative for health, homelessness, and housing, as well as VISTA, is Sulima Balderas. That's Sulima, S-U-L-E-Y-M-A dot Balderas, B-A-L-D-E-R-A-S, at asm.ca.gov. That's Sulima.Balderas at asm.ca.gov. Or you could call my office at 760-434-7605. You can visit my website. This is where you're going to find the Teleton Hall and all the resources Kelly took us through today at www.a76.asmdc.org. And we'll have an archive of this recording as well as all the other ones we've done. So it's really important that we kind of do this so that even if people can't take an hour out of their day between 4 and 5 p.m. on a Thursday, they could go, listen to one and go on a walk or, do some exercises in the backyard and listen to it or maybe listen to it with their family. So we have some helpful links. We have 211 San Diego at 211sandiego.org. We have First 5 California at www.first.com. The number 5, California.com, or the American Academy of Pediatrics at www.healthychildren.org. The National Sexual Assault Hotline is 800-656-HOPE. That's 800-656-HOPE and 800-799-SAFE. So those are ways to get a hold of the National Sexual Assault Hotline. And to reach a crisis text line, you can text HOME to 741-741. So if you're in crisis, you're listening to this, you're in crisis, text HOME to 741-741. Thank you again, everybody. Please enjoy your evening and please stay safe, North County. Thank you so much.